All right, welcome back to, I think this is episode 6 of Prague Fever, a
yes, sir.
Big 12 basketball pod brought to you by killerfrogs.com, as always. That's Nick Giramani. I'm Davis Wilson. Nick, what's up, man? How are you?
What's up? How are you? We finally took our first loss, so
yeah,
we got a new tone in this episode, but
yeah,
I'm excited for some women's basketball talk and to get it going.
A darker tone in the basket in the pod today, but yeah, we do actually have we had our killerfrogs.com colleague Tori Couch on, and we talked to her about the TCU women's team that I believe is still undefeated. So
yeah, at least one of them stayed undefeated this weekend.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a plus.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a good pod. Tori was super great to talk to. We'll be having her back on for sure. But before we get into the TCU men's and women's stuff, let's talk some Big 12. There are a lot of big games this weekend, it felt like, for a lot of teams. Where do you kind of want to start? What game you want to start with?
Yeah, you want to start with the wins? We can talk a little Mizzou, Kansas.
Yeah.
Rivalry.
Yeah.
Yeah, to get that out of the way with the pros, I mean, Mizzou went at Kansas, rivalry game. We thought it could be closer than expected. Kansas ended up pulling up the win. I don't know. What do you think about it being the Mizzou student?
I was ready to come on here and parade my Mizzou gear around because the start that Missouri got off to had me think we might do it. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to sound weird because Mizzou kept it closer, but I don't think either team really played as well as they could have played. Missouri kind of punched him in the mouth at first. Like it was looking like Kansas may be in trouble. And then, like they do all the time at Allen Fieldhouse, they went on this massive run that like just Missouri could not stop. I can't remember what it was, like 20-2 to close the half or something. And it was like this 4-minute run. But outside of that run, it was like Missouri was the better team outside that 4-minute run, technically, just how the scoring worked. So I don't know. It was a weird game. It's just, yeah, I think Missouri just ran into a team that was more talented than them. And that kind of, I think that kind of did the trick for Kansas, and the Jayhawks did it again. But yeah, I mean, what did you think about that game?
Yeah, I remember they went up like 15-2 at the start, and then I texted you like watch out for Mizzou. So I probably jumped the gun on that one. But you know, I mean, Mizzou kept it close at the end. I remember they made that little run to probably make it closer than it was. Nothing too out of the ordinary. We don't have to spend too much on this one, but I think it's just worth noting that Kansas took care of business in what is a rivalry game, and McCullough played well, Adams played well. Dickinson didn't have the most productive night because I feel like one of Mizzou's goals was to try to neutralize them, and make other guys take shots. So good win for Kansas. You know, these are the games you have to pull out that'll be tougher, and they were tested a little early, but they responded well. So
yeah,
good win for Kansas, and they move on.
KJ Adams, quick on him. He's still playing very well. He's like I don't know, he's somehow one of the more likable Kansas players I've ever come across, but
yeah,
he was terrorizing Missouri because for whatever reason, Missouri would not like come up and guard him in the mid range. And he was not missing from the mid range. And he kind of took it felt like he and Hunter kind of took roles scoring wise. He kind of took the scoring role along with McCullough, of course, but McCullough wasn't super efficient. KJ was. And yeah, I kind of thought if Missouri could neutralize Dickinson that they would have a better chance at winning, which they did have a better chance at winning, but they did not have a plan in place for KJ Adams, and he kind of beat him up. But Missouri, I mean, Kansas Kansas only played five guys over 10 minutes, which is crazy. It still surprises me.
Yeah.
Missouri, different story. They, I guess, technically only had seven guys over 10 minutes, but they played a ton of dudes. So, yeah, it was kind of what I was expecting out of that game. Honestly, I thought maybe Kansas would win by more, but I don't know if either team was super great. And when that's the case, it's usually the more talented team that's going to come away.
Yeah, on KJ Adams too. We've been talking about trying to find the guy for Kansas to step up and be the next guy. And if he could drop 17 on 7 of 13, taking the most shots, that's a big load to take off of Dickinson and McCullough and Harris to be that guy. But they are one injury away from being really in trouble because they only do play five guys for the most part. So that's definitely something to watch.
Interesting. All right, where do you want to go now? You want to go to who else lost? Xavier, Cincinnati. Cincinnati ended up losing, I think, right?
We could do OU if you want. That was a super interesting game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Oklahoma. Still, still looking good.
Yeah, I think they're officially legit now because they went so Arkansas, it was at OU, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or it might have been a neutral site.
Yeah, but I think they may play those in, like, Tulsa or something, like, kind of in the middle.
Yeah, it was – yeah, because the core was weird because it didn't really have, like, a center logo. It just kind of said Oklahoma.
Mm.
And it was on the second TV when on the TCU Clemson game. So I kind of just kept an eye on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been talking about Oklahoma recently, how they have surprised a lot of people being this being undefeated this late in the season. And this was a huge litmus test for them because Arkansas is, as we know, is one of the top talented teams in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And they just responded well. Like, they had control of this game for the most part of the entire game. And Javion McCollum, their guard, played well. Milas Uzun, their other guard, played well. Otega Owe, who we talked is one of the most efficient players in the nation. He had 14. They had bench support. Like, they are legitimately a good team. I think they're 11th in the AP poll this week. But in terms of looking at Oklahoma as just being just off to a good start, I think we can put that past now because they've had Iowa, USC, Providence, Arkansas, the non-conference, who have all been super good. Mm-hmm. And so we can officially look at Oklahoma as one of the top teams in the Big 12 and something to definitely keep an eye out for.
Yeah, I agree. And then they play North Carolina on December 20th in a neutral site. So one more really good game for them. But yeah, I
think it's in Charlotte actually too. So that'll probably be like mostly North Carolina fans. So that'll be a super tough test for them. If they pull that out, then they are legitimately like a top 10 team maybe in the nation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. Just their guys are playing well. They looked really good. Rivaldo Soares had what do you have, 13 off the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just I feel like they kind of take it to they like to play Arkansas. They have these games against Arkansas, or at least they have recently, where they go and they kind of, I might be wrong about this, but I seem to remember Oklahoma kind of has a handle on Arkansas. And Arkansas, I mean, this isn't a SEC pod, so we're not going to get into it. But at some point, I mean, we got to talk. I mean, someone's going to have to talk about Arkansas. We don't have to do that, but someone is going to have to talk about the kind of the slowish start they've gotten off to. But
yeah. They kind of always do that, though, I feel like, because they just have all these talented freshmen and newcomers, and then you kind of write them off, and then they get hot at the right time, right for the tournament, and then Musk ends up going to the Sweet 16 or something. So,
yeah, and to be fair to them,
it'd be fine.
To be fair to them, they only have one semi-bad loss, and that was to UNC Greensboro, who's 107 in KenPom. The rest were all top 35 teams, so... probably no reason to worry about them, but it's always interesting to see kind of how those bigger name programs do at the beginning of the year, and especially the teams that bring in all those freshmen. I think that's an interesting strategy. I'm always kind of interested to see how that works. Kind of the same deal with Kentucky. Similar
vibe. I know we talk Big 12 too, but like it's funny how Arkansas and Michigan State with the rep of Izzo and Musk being these tournament coaches, like they've done kind of exact, they're just the two best teams that struggle early because they don't seem to really care about early losses. And they'll like, I wouldn't write off Michigan State or Arkansas coming up, but they're definitely two of the most struggling teams right now.
Okay, where should we go next? You choose.
Yeah, we can go to the losses. We're gonna see like how much we want to overreact to. There are three big losses I kind of want to highlight. The first is Xavier Cincinnati, which is a rivalry game. We were talking about this because Cincinnati was undefeated, like a TCU, where they hadn't played anybody and they probably didn't even have as good of a win as Georgetown for TCU. But they went at Xavier, a rivalry game, and they took the loss in a close game that was back and forth pretty much the whole way. I think they took a lead in the second half that they kind of propelled on, but they ended up losing it. So how much do you want to panic on Cincinnati, and how good of a team do you think they are?
Yeah, I don't think I want to panic on Cincinnati really at all yet. There's still I mean, KenPom still has them 30th, which is actually higher than Xavier. I can't find what the spread was on that, but I mean, I don't think that's a bad loss at all. They kept it very close in a tough environment. Xavier's a tough place to play. They had guys who, I mean, you know, in these losses, it's always nice to look at, you know, did they have guys who showed up? And they did. They had, let's see, they had four guys who had at least 15 points. So that's kind of fun to see the scoring go around. They really couldn't do anything about Quincy Oliveri from the point guard from Xavier, and that's kind of what it came down to. He had 27 in the game, and but yeah, to go back to your original question, they're the team that I'm really intrigued by. I get like not like almost TCU vibes. I don't think they're as talented as TCU is, but I don't know. I don't know. I think they're similar teams in the fact that they didn't play anyone. They kind of had their first big tests and you know, dropped it. But I'm not worried about them the same way I'm not worried about TCU.
It was just more of a litmus test game because they hadn't played anybody, and they so you know that they're either at the same level as Xavier or a little bit worse, and then they're better than all the other mediocre teams they played. They don't really have another test in the non-conference. They play Dayton in a semi-home game later on, but other than that, it'll be interesting to see that game and if they run the table, because we didn't really have much expectation of Cincinnati coming into the year, and they've pleased so far by being undefeated into that Xavier game. But Xavier is coming off three losses, and they were going to be pissed off at home in a rivalry game. So they obviously had a lot more to lose than Cincy in that game, I feel like. So I wouldn't overreact too much as well, and I would just kind of wait and see with Cincy. I still don't think they're going to be a top team in the Big 12. They'll probably be around the mid because this conference is just so deep. But I wouldn't panic too much, and I would just kind of take it as a okay loss to have on your resume.
So what is a mid, like say like a 6 to 9 range Big 12 team? Where, I mean, those teams get in the tournament, like where do you see, like if they got the 8 seed in the Big 12, what does that translate to in the tournament? Because the Big 12 is such a loaded group of teams that if they finish middle of the road in conference play, that's a team that I would definitely be excited about watching in March,
Definitely.
playing some other teams. So I don't know, like how does that translate? Because I feel like that's kind of where TCU has been. Not maybe, I mean, a couple of years, for the last couple of years, they're kind of in the middle of the road in the Big 12, and they end up getting that like 8, 8, 9, 6 seed in the conference. So where do you kind of see a middle of the pack team in the Big 12 go in the tournament?
Yeah, I think to a great point. Having TCU being that example of it last year, where you can be an 8 or 9 seed, and I think Oklahoma a couple of years ago was that, and so that's just the boost you get from being in the conference that's just so much better than other teams. I think that this conference has a legit chance to put 10, 11, 12 teams in the tournament, which sounds crazy,
That is
but
crazy.
they have, what nine? They have 9 teams in the top 46 of KenPom, which is unfathomable. And then if you add if a UCF or an Oklahoma State gets on a run, then you can add that to it. But that middle tier in the Big 12, Oklahoma might have pushed themselves up, but you have Cincy, Texas, TCU, Texas Tech, K-State, who we're going to talk about. But I mean, being mid in the Big 12 is a compliment. And I think if Cincinnati ends up being there, then that's a huge success in year one for
Yeah,
sure.
absolutely. Do you want to do, let's do BYU Utah, another rivalry game that BYU, number one net team, BYU.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun while it lasted.
The run was fun. We had fun with it. And they went on the road. I believe this was in Salt Lake City. Is that right? They went on the road and lost to Utah. Yeah. And I don't want to panic about BYU at all. I still think they're one of the better teams in the conference. I mean, maybe not the top tier where you have like Houston and Baylor and Kansas, but I think they're kind of the upper, maybe that 4 or 5 team that is going to continue to win. And that's a tough environment to go into. Those schools don't enjoy each other, so I'm sure the environment was pretty exciting. And BYU already has some good wins. So yeah, I mean they beat San Diego State, they beat North Carolina State, both pretty good wins, Arizona State as well. So I'm not going to write them off at all. I'm not ready for that because I think that's a legit team that just kind of ran into a tough, I mean, that just happened. That happens. Good environments in college basketball, the best, and they ran into one of them. So, what do you think about BYU?
Yeah, I still think they're legit, and I still think they can be a potential top five team in the Big 12. It's similar to that Cincy Xavier game where Utah and BYU hate each other and they're right next to each other. So going there is obviously going to be super tough, especially when you have the target on your back of being number one team in the net, and I don't know where they were in the AP, but top end of the AP. So BYU or Utah had more to lose, and BYU still played them super tough, and they had decent games across the board. Like, they had four scores or five scores in double digits. They were a little cold from three, which they usually have success in, which is tough. But I wouldn't panic as well, and they're probably not the number one team in the nation according to net, but you can still be in the top tier without being number one. So I wouldn't panic at all. I think they were destined to have a loss, and they don't play anybody else before conference play, so they should be fine. And they should having one loss on your non-conference coming into conference in your first year in the Big 12 is a huge success. And BYU is still gonna sneak up on teams and have lots of
Absolutely.
success this year.
They are, especially at this time of year, I like to look at KenPom before I look at net, just because net is a little wonky, like we discovered last week to start the year. But BYU is still 8th in the country in KenPom, which is just kind of crazy. They are like a legit, really good team. They were 6th before they lost to Utah. So, like, this is a really good team that's actually ranked ahead of Kansas, ahead of Iowa State, ahead of Oklahoma. Like, this is a really good team. Mark Pope is doing, I mean, a really good job there. And for your first year in the Big 12, this is the best. I mean, this is exactly what you want, right?
They're so deep too, and I think when like we've seen with TCU, when Big 12 play comes, like things come up and injuries happen where you're gonna have to rely on guys deep. So, in a crazy way, if some like they're more secure than a Kansas when it comes to that end, they're higher in these metrics than Kansas. I don't think they're a better team than Kansas, but they could be put in a position where they can seriously compete at the top because of how deep they are and how many guys they can rely on right now. So that's huge for them.
UCF Ole Miss. UCF lost to Ole Miss this weekend. And UCF is kind of one of those teams that's on the edge of, are we writing them off or are they going to be frisky? What do you think? What are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I thought it was worth talking about this game because of we haven't really talked about UCF yet, and I still I don't think they're as bad as a West Virginia or even maybe an Oklahoma State so far. They've had one bad loss to Stetson. They haven't really played anybody. They lost to Miami, which is they're a worse team than Miami. And they lost to Ole Miss, and I think that was a good test for them because Ole Miss is kind of in their range of good. I think Ole Miss is undefeated, but they're not good in the metrics, and I don't think they were supposed to be that good, so they played them tough. I think UCF, yeah, can pull off some upsets. Like I was watching this game yesterday. They have some good players. That point guard Darius Johnson for them, like he's developed a lot. I believe he returned to them from last year, but I mean that dude's a baller. He was hitting shots. He was making sure their offense goes. They have athletic bigs. They're not great, but I just thought it was, and I don't think they'll compete in the Big 12, but they could if they pull off some wins, be a bubble team. So I just thought it was worth talking about that game, as it was a loss, but it was not a horrible loss, and you should keep an eye out for this UCF team, as you can't sleep on him when conference play
We
comes.
haven't talked too much about them over the course of the last couple of weeks, but like you said, they're one of those teams who actually is in a position still where they could go on a run in the Big 12 and get, like, if you're like the 10 seed in the Big 12, that might be good enough, you know? So you just have to, and especially you want to stack wins in non-conference when that's the case, when you are a 10 seed in the Big 12, but still they're going to have chances to get big wins. They play their, I mean, they play three games in which they should win them all. They're all home games. They play Maine, Florida A&M, Bethune-Cookman, and then they go to Kansas State to start. And I think that is going to be a really intriguing game. Two teams who are going to want to get Big 12 playoff on the right foot. So, yeah, I mean, Johnny Dawkins was, when I was at Media Day a couple months ago, he was one of the coaches that kind of intrigued me. He just, I don't know, I liked him and I could tell he was, I mean, he knew what he was talking about. He's a smart basketball guy. So I've kind of always, I've been kind of sneakily watching UCF and kind of hoping that they can turn this season into something, and it looks like they're going to have a chance to.
As we said before, with how deep the Big 12 is, you just win, I don't know, six, seven, eight games, and you might have a shot at the return mode, which is crazy, but it could happen.
Before we go to some Kansas State stuff, how about the Big 12 newcomers? All kind of holding their own. I mean, UCF has some work to do in that regard, but the other three are what is it, top 30 in KenPom. So, and you
And
know
BYU
when,
and Houston being top eight, like it's insane.
when you added those schools, it was kind of more of like you'll get Houston for basketball and then three decent football programs, but it's kind of like they are all showing that basketball can, they can take basketball seriously. And you know, depending on what UCF does over the course of conference play, which is going to be really tough for them, but depending on what they do, we might be looking at all four teams in the, all four newcoming teams in the March Madness tournament, which would be super, super cool, especially when we have so many big teams coming in next year. Like, I thought that was cool, and a really encouraging sign for the overall kind of big picture look of the Big 12 in basketball.
Definitely. I think that's just kudos to Brett Yormark, because he, when you have all this conference realignment and you're losing Texas and OU and your football's starting to take a dip, he took a route that I think a lot of commissioners wouldn't take because of how dominant, money is and market is with football, where you just try to pull some strings. But he's taken the route almost of trying to make this as good of a basketball conference as it can be, and he's done that. It was already by far the top basketball conference, and he's made it that much better to where it is unfathomable how deep this team is, and it makes it the best conference to watch on TV and just boosts the credibility for them, because basketball is the second most important sport past football, obviously. So when you can have success in basketball, it only builds your credibility that much more, and it makes the Big 12 much more likely to stick around and have success.
Yeah, that was an interesting approach. He kind of had the self-awareness that with the group we have, we are probably going to be fun in football, but we're not going to be the top conference in football ever. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I think he kind of looked around and said, let's just commit to basketball. And I mean, he it's I thought I mean that's kind of a brave move to do right now when football is so much the dominant sport, but he committed to adding some schools that had pedigree in basketball. Next year we have number one in the country, Arizona, coming. So it's just it only is going to get better. And there are even, I mean, we don't have to talk too much about these rumors, but there are, you know, there have been
Gonzaga.
Gonzaga rumors for a little bit. There was UConn rumors a long time ago. I don't know if that's going to happen, but Gonzaga is not out of play, in my opinion. So I just think it's really cool what he's done, and it's made this time of year a lot of fun. You know, for basketball fans.
Yeah, I don't know about UConn because they have a football team and that would just tank football that much because they're that bad. But I wouldn't be opposed to adding a Gonzaga or another team for a basketball only. I think it's I don't know, with how deep this is, like it would be sick to get Gonzaga, Kansas, Gonzaga, Arizona, Arizona, like Houston, all these great teams in there, and it could just be basketball, and that would be awesome to see these matchups every single season.
And then Colorado and Arizona State are both in Utah, you know, all those three teams that are coming in are, you know, they can play.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's do Kansas State stuff. They've had last week we said they had a dramatic week for other reasons. They won three straight overtime games last week, but this week, dramatic for other reasons. Do you want to talk about take us through the Naquan Tomlin saga and what's kind of happening there?
Well, Kansas State was already in shambles the past couple weeks because Colin Klein went to Texas A&M, who was such a big figure in Kansas State, and Kansas State football has seen so many players hit the portal that are of massive importance to them. And right when that was all going down, I believe the next day, Naquan Tomlin, who's one of their best players and one of their top returning players, who ironically was in a bar fight the night of the Kansas State TCU game when Kansas State kicked our ass. And silver lining, he gets into a bar fight and then, he gets indefinitely suspended for the team. So we've been waiting, I don't know, months and months to see what it would actually turn out to be. And the other day, he was announced that Kansas State would no longer be having Naquan Tomlin play for them. And that was questioning to a lot of fans, being like, why would they do this? And it turned out that Tang and the athletic director wanted him to actually have a part in this team, but the president of the school overruled him. So now it leaves Kansas State obviously without one of their best players for the rest of the season, allows another team to pick him up. But looking at a more broader range of things, it leaves Tang in a weird position with the with Kansas State as a university and their president and how much ruling he actually gets. So I don't know, very interesting how that lies. What do you think about it?
Well, I think it's going to be really a rare situation where I think he's a grad. Yeah, he graduated. So he's a grad transfer that's in the portal and can play for any team that goes and gets him after, you know, in January when he clears the, you know, he graduates. But that's so rare to have a guy of his caliber just in the portal. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not super, I haven't read up on a lot of the kind of, you know, the details of, what kind of happened there. I know the story, but I think it's interesting that, you know, his athletic people wanted him there and were hoping he could be there. And it was kind of the school that, you know, said no. But like, he's a great player, and it's sad for him. It's sad for Kansas State fans. I mean, they were out there for, I did see videos of them protesting at, it was like at the president's house or something. So,
Yeah,
I mean,
it was not good.
yeah, you don't protest for some guy who's, a regular player. He's a great player, and it's a big loss for Kansas State. A Kansas State team that we already have questions about is not going to get Tomlin back, and that's going to be something to watch.
Yeah, they had a nice bounce back, actually. They had a nice 15-point win over LSU, which was kind of big because they kind of seemed like they were just playing for themselves, playing for him, because all the players were kind of upset with the ruling. But I think with the K-State fans protesting too, I think every single one of them, if it is a standoff between Tang and it spirals into something that's bigger than it already is, I think every K-State fan would take Tang over whatever the president says because he's that valuable to their program. So if this or these reports are true that Tang didn't want it to happen like this and he doesn't feel like he has as big of a say as he would want to, then that's huge for the route that he feels comfortable at Kansas State because he has had so much success and has become one of the biggest names in college basketball as a coach. If he wanted to, I mean, he could have his pick at anywhere, seeing how the coaching carousel wears out. Like, if Indiana has another unsuccessful season, how valuable that is if Woodson goes, or I don't know, like Oregon's struggling a little bit if they want to go a different route. There's just so many options that this could lay into. I wonder if Kansas State will bounce back and Tang will, it'll just be swept under the rug and everything. But I mean, that's kind of a big deal if you don't feel like you have the say of what your players can do in this scenario. So very interesting
It is
to see how it plays
interesting
out.
the a guy that I mean is so big and so beloved at Kansas State, really, it doesn't feel like he has the, I don't know if it, if support's the right word, but it feels like there is some sort of lack of communication there, and obviously differing ideas. So it will be interesting, something to watch. I've always kind of seen him as a guy who, I mean, since he's been there, it looks like he loves it and they love him. So
Yeah.
who knows how that's going to go, but something to watch for sure. And unfortunate for them, but another program, I can't remember the schools that are looking at Naquan Tomlin, but another program.
Seems like everybody.
Yeah, I mean, probably he can go wherever he wants in some cases, but yeah, some programs getting a dude, and that's pretty unique to just add someone like that in January, right when conference play starts. So that'll be interesting. It's really fascinating. It's a fascinating situation. I'm very interested to see how it plays out for both parties.
Yeah, one last thing too. Like, I don't know how bad the details of the situation were or if it was anything more than a bar fight, but it seems like, like college kids just do dumb stuff all the time. That seems like an extreme measure for what the situation that we know the details of was. So, I mean, if I was being put in the K-State fans' perspective, like, I understand why they'd be pissed at the president. And the ruling of the situation.
All right. You want to take a quick break and come back and talk TCU?
Yeah. Should
Cool.
we send it to Tori?
Oh, yeah. Let's bring in Tori first, and then we'll after that we'll be into some men's basketball stuff. All
Perfect.
right, welcome back. We have with us one of our Killer Frogs colleagues, Tori Couch. Tori, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, Nick and I have talked a lot about the undefeated TCU men's basketball team, but there is another TCU's basketball team that is undefeated to start the year, led by the new head coach Mark Campbell. What can you tell us about the start that the women's team has got off to this year?
Yeah, this has been quite a fun team to watch. They're 9-0 right now when we're recording. By the time this airs, they'll hopefully be 10-0 after their game against Prairie View A&M. And they've already had the best start in program history. 8-0 made that mark. And they're close to matching the best winning streak in program history as well. So this has been quite a start for really a team that's a lot of new faces. There's two high school recruits, six returners from last season's squad, and then 6 transfers that Campbell has brought in, and 5 of those transfers are starters. Wow. So this is really a transfer heavy, transfer driven team, if you will. But it's working. Mm-hmm. You know, and Campbell's had success before. He came to TCU from Sacramento State, where he spent the last 2 seasons. When he took over, they were 3-22. And in 2 seasons, in his second season, they went to the NCAA tournament for the first time in program history, won the Big Sky regular season championship the first time in tournament history, and won 25 games. So it's early. I know we haven't hit Big 12 play yet, but I think this was a fantastic hire by Jeremiah Donati.
What do you think it is about Campbell that has this unique pull where he's gotten Madison Connor, Sedona Prince, Jaden Owens, and looking ahead forward, Haley Kavanagh, that makes people so comfortable wanting to come to TCU? And what is that impact he has amongst the recruits?
Yeah, I think one thing that was interesting he said after one of the games was, you know, this team is a little bit of an underdog mentality. A lot of people don't know where Sacramento State is, which is where he came from. You know, so he's kind of got a chip on his shoulder. And all these women that he's recruited, all the ones that you mentioned and some of the others, they've all got a bit of a chip on their shoulder. Madison Connor came from Arizona. She's played at a really high level, but she felt like she could do more. Sedona Prince came from Oregon, where Mark Campbell was an assistant for 7 years. Same sort of thing. Jaden Owen came from Baylor, a very successful program. So I think it's a lot of just, he sees that these individuals have the ability to do even more than what they're already doing, where they're at. And they believe them, and they're completely buying into them.
You talk about Madison Connor from Arizona, and I'm looking at her numbers here. She went from 5.8 points last year to currently she's averaging 24.8 points on really efficient numbers. What have you seen from her? What can you credit her improvement to so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible watching her shoot. She's kind of fearless when it comes to shooting the ball, especially from behind the 3-point line. She has made 19 threes in her last 2 games. And like you said, it's on really efficient numbers. It's not like she's shooting 20%. She's shooting mid-30s and above. And, you know, when you ask her about it, she says, you know, I'm just in the gym all the time. I'm shooting. I'm getting my confidence up. I'm just trusting myself. And it's really paying off for her. She dropped a career high 41 points against Tulsa, 10 of 15 from 3. I mean, that's just incredible. And it's just showing the hard work that she's put in.
Yeah, I saw a number that she's third in the nation in scoring, obviously, and she has the most threes in the nation over top tier players like Caitlin Clark, who we all know, and all types of other players. So she is legitimately one of the top players in the country. Was this expected coming in, and was this instant success expected, or is it just kind of out of nowhere?
I think in some ways it was expected. It's kind of that potential, I think, that Campbell saw in her when he recruited her. And I think that kind of goes back to that mentality of, they all knew, all these players know I can achieve a lot, but maybe they just weren't in a situation where they could be the star player or whatever that might look like. So it maybe is a little bit surprising, but I don't think necessarily Madison or Coach Campbell are surprised, because I think he saw that in her when he recruited her.
So one of the names that Coach Campbell brought in, that, you know, someone who hasn't followed TCU basketball extensively, you know, I recognize Sedona Prince when she signed with TCU, because she has this presence on social media. She's a really great player. She's from Texas. How big of a get was that? Because I know there was a lot of buzz that she may have been able to enter the WNBA draft instead of going back to school. So how big of a get was Sedona Prince, and just how good has she been so far?
Yeah. No, I think she was an incredible get for this program. You know, this is Mark Campbell's first year, and he wants to create an exciting environment and somewhere to attract players. And I think Sedona was a huge piece of that. Like I mentioned earlier, he was an assistant in Oregon when she played there. So they know each other. And I think that helps a lot in that kind of situation. You know, she had an injury, so she lost a season when she was at Oregon. And so I don't know if that maybe played into her decision a little bit too, of here's an opportunity to be the player, to be the post, the center. and just gain a little bit more experience and get a little bit more stock going into the WNBA. And she has been so important to this team. She's averaging almost a double-double, 21 points and 9.8 rebounds. When she's working with Madison Connor or Jaden Noah's off the pick and roll, it is so hard to stop because she rolls that basket so strong. They can dump it off to her. She'll finish through contact, or there's a double team on her, leaves that guard wide open for a shot or maybe another pass, an open player. So, I mean, Sedona, she's putting up points and putting up numbers, but I think she does a lot of some of those intangible things that aren't going to show up in the box score as well.
And we talked about social media poll, like with Sedona Prince, Jaden Owens, and Haley Cavender for next year. They're all, I believe, in the top 10 for NIL evaluation too. Does that actually play an impact on, you think, the success TCU is having or the poll Campbell is having, or is it just fun for the fans to talk about?
It's a little bit of both. It's fun for the fans to talk about because it's a way for them to kind of interact with the players and see them in a completely different light. But I haven't heard too much the games I've been to about social media and how important maybe that has been in the recruiting process. I'm sure it plays some factor, but I think it's a lot for the fans too, just to be able to see them in a completely different light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other transfer that, you know, has been mentioned a lot already is Jaden Owens from Baylor. Can you talk to us about her game, what she does well? And, you know, I see she's leading the team in assists. She's a good passer, obviously, but what is it that she brings? And the other thing is she's a grad transfer from a really successful Baylor program. So what is her experience in addition to her skill set bring to Mark Campbell's squad?
Yeah. So she is the point guard. She is 100% who that offense kind of flows through. After one of the games, Campbell called her a magician just because of the way she sees the court, her ability to find open teammates and put them in position to score. I think she had back-to-back games with double-digit assists. That's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. So her court awareness is absolutely incredible, and it's a really rare find. She's one of those players, she's not going to score a lot. When she does shoot, it's a really well-thought-out, intentional shot that has a really high percentage of going in. So she's not going to put up a bunch of double-doubles or anything like that, but she's going to get everybody involved, and I think there's a lot of value in that. You know, she ranks third in the nation in assists, and she's 13th in assist to turnover ratio, so she's not going to give up the ball either, and I think that's really important. And like you mentioned, she's experienced. Mm-hmm. She's been at a program where they've been in the NCAA tournament and things like that, and what this, I know this team wants to get to that point where they're playing in the NCAA tournament. And so that experience is just going to be so invaluable, not just when you get there, but getting there in conference play, in those tight games, in those moments where it feels like, man, can we pull this off? You have players like Jaden Owens who are like, yeah, we can do this. And this is how.
Yeah. So when we're looking at the team, we've talked about, you know, Sedona, Madison, Jaden, all these stacked players, and they are undefeated to this point. When you look at the conferences, as well as men's too, there's only so many undefeated teams, and there's six left of the few undefeated teams left in men's basketball that's in the Big 12, and there's six in the women's in the Big 12. So obviously they're both probably the best conferences in the nation. When TCU is ranked 31 in the net and fifth in the Big 12, how do you see them stacking up once conference play starts?
Gonna be something that's really interesting to watch because their non-conference schedule hasn't been incredibly tough. They have one really good top 20 net win over Nebraska. They got that the St. Pete's showcase a couple weeks ago. So I think that was a really nice win, a really good test for them because it was a tightly contested game that, you know, and their leading scorer wasn't someone that you think of. It was Agnes Emanopu, who coach calls her the backbone of this team because she's going to do kind of the scrappy play. She's going to get you a ton of offensive rebounds and just all those plays that keep you alive. And so I'm very curious to see how this team does do once conference play starts, because I think there is depth, but it's going to come out in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe not necessarily, you know, all these girls have the ability to be a leading scorer, But I think most nights it's going to be Madison or Sedona. So I think it's going to be a lot of who can step up when one of them's having an off night or being double guard, you know, double guard, whatever the case might be. So I think they can do well in Big 12 play, but I think there'll still be an adjustment period because it's going to be a step up in competition for sure.
Over the last couple seasons, TCU fans have not really gotten to see a TCU women's basketball team, you know, really be competitive, especially last year. What were they? They were 8-23 last year. So with this team, what do you view as kind of the ceiling or what this, you know, what's the best case scenario for this this year's team?
That's a really good question. You know, they're still growing. And that's what makes it hard to answer that question is they're still learning to play together. This team has been together since June when summer workout started and they had their international trips. They got a little bit of extra time together, which I think is going to be really helpful. But they're still learning to play together. So I think you're going to see a lot of good things. You're going to see some mistakes that might, you're kind of go, really? That? They're still learning to play off each other. So I think for me, Washington's team, my expectations is I think they'll finish top half of the Big 12, which would be a huge accomplishment. Could they potentially, you know, figure out enough things and finish top 1, 2, or 3? I mean, anything's possible, but I'm not going to put those expectations on this team just because there are some things that they're still trying to learn. But I think, you know, somewhere in the middle of Big 12, 5, 6, 7, 8 range, I think that's realistic.
With how much experience this team has, though, with all these transfers that have played a lot of college basketball, and Campbell talks about how competitive they are and wanting to win right now, do you think there is more of a drive to have instant success this season than there would be in years past?
Oh, absolutely. And you kind of get that feeling when the girls talk in the post-game press conferences, they want to get better every single game. If they have a quarter where they maybe lose focus, you know, after the game, they're like, yeah, we messed that up. We're not going to let it happen again. So I do think that experience and that drive is going to help them probably finish better than maybe you'd expect. So that's why I said they could finish up near the very, very top of the Big 12. But this conference is so deep. You know, you're running up against a lot of teams that have experience and that in a similar drive. So that's why I don't want to put expectations at a certain level, but I do. I think that's really a point. They have so much experience that I think they're going to be able to achieve quite a bit.
And as far as like the trajectory of the program itself with Mark Campbell, leading it, is he one of those guys that can, kind of vault this program into a stratosphere they really haven't been? Is he a guy that can, you know, lead this team to deep runs in March? Or just for the future, looking ahead, what is this team's potential under a guy like Mark Campbell, who's already doing a really good job in Fort Worth?
I think there's a lot of potential here. You know, just his first 2 years as head coach at Sac State, yes, it's a small sample size. It's a very different conference. It's not a Power 5 or Power 6. But I think that right there just shows you if the players have bought into what he's doing, if the staff, if everybody's bought in, he can do a lot in just a short amount of time. And so I think there's a great trajectory for this program. We kind of mentioned it earlier. Cavender has signed on for next year. And I think that's that pull of Mark Campbell of the excitement, the belief, and just that mentality of I can do even more than what I've been doing. So I think there's a lot of potential for this team, and there'll be a lot of new faces next year moving forward just because so many of these transfers are finishing out their eligibility. But in some ways, I think that's okay because you need that starting point. And I think this has potential to be a really great starting point for this program.
Talking more specifically about Cavender, I think a lot of Frogs fans jumped at that news and was excited about what women's basketball had to come, not this year, but also next year, and the dynasty is built. How did that recruitment go about, and is Cavender a legit good player, or is it just a personality that Frog fans are just excited for?
I don't know much about the recruitment side of her, but I do know she is a very good player. She was on Miami. They made a run into the Elite Eight, I believe, is where they landed. And before that, her and her twin sister were at Fresno State. And I believe Haley ended up being the Mountain West Player of the Year. She earned a ton of accolades as a freshman. Like, she is a really good player. So I don't, you know, yeah, it's easy to get excited about something that looks good on paper or has all these social media followers things. I think there is a lot of potential with her coming on board to, you know, whatever the roster turnover looks like next year, to kind of step in right away and be that next big scorer, that next person that TCU basketball extends that goes and says, okay, you're going to lead us.
Mm-hmm. In this kind of new era of college athletics where the transfer portal is so important, and we've already seen Mark Campbell, you know, dip his toe into it, you know, with Sedona Prince, big names like Sedona Prince and Haley Cavender. Do you have a read on what his priorities will be? Is he a guy that's going to really focus on the portal? Or is he a guy that's going to really focus on high school? Or is he, you know, do you think he'll try to split kind of down the middle and, you know, at the same time develop young players while also bringing experience in? What do you envision, you know, his process of acquiring new talent looking like?
I think he'll do a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. There's some of those freshmen right now, he's been able to get them into games, you know, when it's a blowout or certain situations, just get them a little experience because he wants them to develop. He wants to be able to reward them for the work they're doing in practice and the development they're having and things like that. So I think we'll see a little bit of a mix. It'll just depend on the needs as far as who's in the portal, high school recruiting, who signs where and those types of things. But he strikes me as a coach who wants to invest in his players and develop them. So if he has an opportunity to develop a player from their first year on campus or one that's, you know, from last year's team, he's going to take that time to develop them. So I think it'll be a little bit of a mix.
Mm-hmm.
When you take a broader outlook on women's basketball, and specifically college women's basketball, it seems like it's taken a big interest step in the past couple of years. Like, I believe that LSU-Iowa game was the most viewed ever last year. So what do you think it is about the trajectory of women's basketball that makes it seem on the rise?
Got a lot of, I mean, first off, there's just a lot of talent. You mentioned the LSU-Iowa game. Caitlin Clark is like not much, like unlike many players we've seen lately at the women's level. Angel Reese for LSU is a very similar kind of just eye-catching, jaw-dropping player. And so I think there's been a lot of student athletes who've just come in and kind of taken the game by storm in a sense. You know, and back in 2020, Sedona Prince, when Oregon was at the NCAA tournament, she was the one who brought some attention to, hey, let's look at these facilities that are being provided for the men versus the women. And so I think some of those things started that momentum of let's pay a little bit more attention to the women's game and what it has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some of that has helped as well get people excited about it. And it is a good product. It's different than a men's game. It's a different speed. It's a little bit different style of basketball, but it's still a really fun product, especially if you're just a basketball junkie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you talk about how the talent in the sport is probably as high as it's ever been. How important is it that TCU is kind of show, like, I mean, they're showing commitment to the sport and they're showing commitment to the program. They bring a guy like Mark Campbell in who brings in these talented players. Just the timing of it all, how important is it that they, you know, as women's basketball is kind of skyrocketing as far as public viewing and recognizability, but how important is it that they have made this decision, you know, go with a new head coach who's going to bring kind of this energy? You mentioned he's going to, you know, he cares about his players. How important is it to bring a guy like that in right now when the sport is as popular as it is?
I think it's huge because it shows that you're seeing what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
And making the necessary adjustments to put yourself in the best position possible to be a part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seasons season's just getting started. We don't know exactly how things are going to finish, but you're putting yourself in a position to be a part of the conversation when you have a star player, transfer portal, or a high school student who's saying, okay, I'm looking at a school. These are things I'm looking for. Well, TCU's a good program. Maybe they'll give me a chance to go do something. So I think it's just really good awareness of kind of the moment and where women's basketball is at.
Mm-hmm.
What is the baseline of success that you would think for a finish in this season?
I think somewhere at 5, 6, 7 range in the Big 12, just because of the amount of talent and experience on this team and just that drive that we've talked about. Watching this team, you get excited watching them and you start to believe, man, they're going to, sky's the limit. They can do anything. And they've talked about that in post games of we're excited to see where we're at the end of the season because we know we have so much talent and so much potential. So I feel like that's probably the baseline. And then kind of see where they can go.
Beginning this Sunday, like you said, they play Prairie View A&M, and then they have 3 more non-conference games before they get into the Big 12 on December 30th against BYU. Is the expectation for this team to finish non-conference play undefeated and head into Big 12 play with an undefeated record?
I mean, I think every team wants to win every game they play, so I think they can go undefeated just based on who their opponents are. They haven't outright said our expectation is to be undefeated going to a conference, but they have that opportunity in front of them. And with the opponents and with the drive that they've had, I think that's a possibility that they could. And I think that would just give them even more momentum going into conference play and more confidence and just, again, ability to work on things. Cause these girls have not been together that long in the grand scheme of a season. So the potential is there. I wouldn't say it's their goal per se, but I would not be surprised if it happens.
You talk about how they haven't been together for very long. It's kind of a bunch of new pieces coming together. What have you seen from the team chemistry wise, and how important is it to have a team that's going to mesh and have that good chemistry?
Yeah, these girls love each other. You can just see it on the court, whether something goes right, something goes wrong. They're there to pick each other up. They're laughing. They're smiling. It's a lot of fun to watch. Then the post game, they're kind of teasing each other during questions, during answers, the way they interact with the media. It just, they're so lighthearted. They're so fun. Either I asked or the other person in the interview kind of asked them about that after the ACU game was, it looks like you guys just care so much about each other. And they're like, we do. Mm-hmm. There's no beef. There's no reason for us not to care about each other. And so I think that's going to be really important as they move forward, because that chemistry that you have off the court translates on the court and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say they're not going to have things come up. Every season has its ups and downs,
sure.
But just watching the way that they care about each other and laugh and interact with each other, it's kind of inspiring, honestly.
With their huge social media following and NIL evaluation, and they seem to be the team that kind of has the hype right now, does that almost put a target on their back, do you think, that will come once conference play starts?
Maybe a little bit, because, potentially you're undefeated and you've got all these really talented big names on your team. But I think in some ways they're feeling like they're the ones going out and finding other people because this program last year was as rough as it was. And, like we've talked about, they're all looking to kind of make their mark. So I don't know if they're necessarily the ones with the target on their back. I think they're seeing themselves going out as, we're going to go take what we want to take and see where things go.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talent on this team. I know this would be a hard question to answer, but if you had to guess, who would be your best guess at who this team's MVP will be at the end of the year?
I mean, right now it's probably Madison Connor, Sedona Prince. Like if the season ended today, it'd be one of those two, just because they're the ones that are your leading scorers. They're the ones, in a sense, filling up the stat sheet. But Coach Campbell in every press conference has talked about the importance of every other player and them playing their role. And so I think that's gonna be interesting to watch throughout the season, is maybe Madison Connor finishes the season as the leading scorer and Sedona Prince is second, but who steps up in some of those other areas, rebounding and things like that. So if you just go on statistics, I think it'd be Madison Connor, Sedona Prince. But if you look at some of those other intangibles, Agnes would be a great candidate because she just comes in with such a fire and just is like, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to play. She came from Stanford, I believe. Yeah, Stanford. So she's won an NCAA title. She's played a national title game. She knows what it takes to win. So she's not going to be afraid out there.
Yeah, well, it seems like, you know, this women's team is definitely something to keep an eye out on and bring fans to come see the games.
Yeah, sorry not to interrupt you, but I would definitely, if you've thought about it, on the fence, whatever, go check out a game. This is a fun team to watch. And especially as Big 12 play gets close, they're going to need more and more fan support. This is a really tough, deep conference. There's two teams that are top 10 in the net. Like, this is, it's going to be tough in the Big 12.
Well, Tori, we really appreciate you coming on and talking women's basketball. It's fun to have, you know, two basketball programs at TCU that are winning. So it's been a fun year so far. Hopefully it continues to be fun. I'm certainly going to check out as many of these games as I can. It sounds like they're playing some really good basketball, but we really appreciate you coming on, and we'd love to have you back at some point, maybe during Big 12 play to kind of check in again and see how this season has kind of moved along.
Absolutely. Be happy to come back on and kind of do another check-in. Absolutely.
For sure.
Definitely. Yeah. TCU might be basketball school now with how these teams are going. So yeah, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. All right. Now we're back for TCU, where we have to talk about the first loss of the season. And man, that half court offense was bad.
Yes. Yes.
I'll let you go first.
It was a, as far as sports things this weekend for both of us, not the best. My Tigers lost, the Frogs lost, the Giants lost out on Shohei.
Yes.
No, I know that's bothering you, but this is one that I mean, we had Colin on last week. Hopefully you listen to that episode, and he kind of made it clear that if he actually said this, if TCU went and lost by double digits to Clemson, he wouldn't be surprised and he would not worry. And I think, first of all, that's basically what happened. TCU went and didn't play their best basketball against Clemson, but it doesn't bother me too much. What about you?
Yeah, it's interesting to have positive takeaways on this, because the shooting performance was that bad where I think you do kind of have to be alarmed by it, because we've seen shooting in the past be an issue for this team. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time this season where I think that losing a Mike Miles type star was hurtful for this team, because you didn't have that constant flow of offense. The only guy that actually did kind of do decently is E-Man, who had 16. But yeah, I don't think we need to overreact on this a lot. This is definitely the best team we've played. I think Clemson's now like 13 in AP. Like, they're a really good team. PJ Hall is one of the best players in the nation. So I liked what we did in the first half, actually. We forced 10 first half turnovers and we're getting out in transition. And we had shot horribly in the first half, and I forget what we were down. We might have been only down two or something. But
down one at half.
Yeah, down one at half. So I was like, if we just make some shots, like, we're getting the ball exactly what we want, and then we just never hit shots. I don't know if it was, you know, uncomfortability in Toronto, or just sometimes you just don't hit shots. So it's definitely a push, because you want to find a constant flow of offense, and, you know, putting up 66 isn't good. Shooting 37% isn't good. Shooting 3 of 16 from 3 isn't good. They're 1 of 14 from three of anybody else other than Chuck. Jameer had a really bad shooting game.
Yeah.
So this team is going to be tested. And yeah, I don't think you have to overreact at all because that's the first time you've seen like a real defense. So you take it with a grain of salt for sure, but it's definitely some alarming things that you now know what you have to work on, which is shooting and literally shooting.
Yeah. They didn't shoot well at all. And yeah, that first half, I mean, watching that game, I was like, man, TCU might run away with this because they were completely pestering Clemson. They were taking the ball from them. It's felt like every play going in transition, just playing fast, exactly how TCU likes to play and really not exactly how Clemson wants to play. So I was thinking, you know, TCU might come in here and get a really good win, but you know, defense and those kind of steals only last so long and go so far. And it was not enough because, you know, you didn't really have that guy to go to. I think we've talked about it a lot throughout the season already about how TCU doesn't necessarily have like the guy, like a guy you give the ball to and say, go get a bucket for me. And that's what Mike Miles was last year, the year before. And that's kind of what we thought Jameer was going to be. And I don't think I'm ready to write Jameer off as that guy because it's really the first bad game he's had. So I don't know. I think that it's kind of exactly, I mean, all the worries we've had about this team kind of came out all at once in this game. And like your guys that have been contributing well, like Jacoby Coles went 3 of 10, scored 6 points. That's not going to happen every game. Jameer was 2 of 12, 0 of 5 from three with 10 points. That's not going to happen every game. Let's see, like
Avery got in foul Anderson, trouble early, which hurt
Avery
us.
Anderson, yeah, 3 fouls, only 2 points, but only 2 shots. So, it was just kind of the case of all your weaknesses, like being, I mean, if you're not going to make shots, you're not going to win any game, really. So, it just wasn't. They didn't look good. I mean, they shot 32% from the field compared to Clemson's 41, 18% from three compared to Clemson's 26, and 75% from the free throw line compared to Clemson's 79. So Clemson outshot them in every aspect and really just had more guys who were on and who were able to score.
Yeah, sometimes you just can't find the bottom of the basket, and you hope that this won't be a constant theme because it is one game, so you still have time to tell. If you're looking at it from a broad perspective too, if you go into conference play with just one loss and it being to a good team, you know, because they don't really play another super tough team, and we'll get to Arizona State talk, but yeah, they have Arizona State this weekend, and then they have that Christmas tournament where they play Old Dominion, I think Georgia Tech's in there, but if they want to be a good team, they should win that game or those games. So bouncing back is going to be huge this weekend because Arizona State is probably the toughest team you have to play non-conference from here on out. But, I mean, that's a successful non-conference if you do take care of business. So I think you wait right now to really panic and just kind of see where this team's at once they start playing more competitive teams.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of one of the worries you have with playing such a weak non-conference schedule. Yeah. Like, there's just going to be, I mean, that's your first test of non-conference, and it's really, I mean, of that caliber, it's your last test. You know, you have Arizona State, who again we'll talk about, but they're not at the level of Clemson, and it kind of. It's good because you have Arizona State before you, and maybe like a Georgia Tech, who's I think like top 150 in KenPom, so not a bad team, not a good team, but not a bad team. So I think I want to see them go and beat Arizona State, and if they play and beat Georgia Tech, and then I kind of feel better. But this is the problem when you schedule teams that are like here's the first seven games, seven opponents KenPom rank as of right now. Yo. So Southern was 241, Nebraska Omaha 278, UT Rio Grande Valley 298, Mississippi Valley State 362, Alcorn State 299, Houston Christian 356, and Georgetown 192, and then you got Clemson at 25. So you play all those terrible teams, and then you see a team with a pulse like Clemson, and you're like, whoa. And really, it was Georgetown. Georgetown had somewhat of a pulse and surprised them, and TCU kind of snuck away with the win there. And then you go to a neutral site and play Clemson, and you're like, whoa, this is what a good team looks like. So I think that's kind of the worry I had with the teams they were playing, but they do have a chance against Arizona State to get their best win of the season. It would be a better win than Georgetown. So I'm excited for that game. And I think that's, I do not want to call it a must win, but it would make me feel good about TCU if they were able to go win that game in Fort Worth at Dickey's Arena, not at Schulmeyer, but still in Fort Worth.
I'd call it a can't lose instead of a must
there
win.
There you go.
That sounds better. Yeah. But no, my takeaway is that this loss makes that Georgetown Emmanuel Miller buzzer beater so much more needed. Like, because if they had lost, I mean, that his folk, like, they were literally probably should have lost that game.
I mean,
I mean, they were a huge shot away from having zero even relatively good wins right now. And that's the risk you take when you play such a weak non-conference. But you do have the Big 12 schedule ahead of you. So you're going to play, like, there's no lack of quality opponents once you hit conference play.
Yeah.
I think if the goal for TCU, if you go, I'd say 500 in conference play, like, that is a success for your season, and that'll get you in the tournament. So, I'm just interested to see what Arizona State brings to the table if we want to start previewing that, because that's going to be a big game for the Frogs.
Yeah, yeah. And one more thing before that, but, like, teams, like, the thing about, like, we say it's okay that TCU plays this caliber of opponent because they have the Big 12 slate, but the thing is, the thing that worries me is, like, you go to the Big 12 play and it takes you a while to get acclimated to that kind of that level of competition. That's trouble for you. And teams like Oklahoma, who's playing, it seems like everyone, they're playing every good team. BYU, we talked about having good wins. Kansas already having big wins and good against good opponents. Like, those teams are going to be able to kind of hit the Big 12 running. Or, you know, in theory, that's the case. And TCU, you know, if they are not going to go and get a win against Arizona State, then you hit the Big 12 and you may have to take some time to adjust, which I really don't think many of these teams that are trying to compete for the conference, not a lot of those teams can kind of afford that. So I'm not worried, but it is something to watch as Big 12 stuff comes around. And maybe they'll go and they'll beat up Arizona State and shut us up. But for now, it's something to look at, in my opinion.
I'm interested to see what Jamie's going to do next year when he creates this schedule, because he's been very confident in having this type of setup schedule where you give them a full month of leeway to kind of work out the kinks and basically play scrimmages. So I don't know. He seems very confident. Again, these next few games will be very big into what that happens, because if you blow another one of these games, then you have to start seriously reconsidering how you do your non-conference, and especially if it hurts them come Selection Sunday, if they're a bubble team or if they're better than that or wherever they fall. So next season's non-conference will be interesting to see how the season treats them and how it'll turn out.
Yep, I agree. Let's talk about this next big game that TCU has, a bit of a rematch with Arizona State. TCU obviously coming out on top in the tournament last year on some Jacoby Cole heroics. This is not the same Arizona State team. This is not the same TCU team. What are your feelings going into this game at Dickey's Arena?
Yeah, as you said, it would be their best win. And Arizona State's not a bad team. They have
top 100 right now.
Yeah, they have a couple good wins over SMU, who TCU fans know very well, and San Francisco, who USF's probably a top 3-4 team in the WCC. So those are two quality wins right there. This is going to be this would be their best win if they won too. So it's a huge game for both squads. They have, I'd say, like three guys to watch on offense. Frankie Collins, who was there last year.
Yeah, I remember.
He's kind of leading. Yeah, he's kind of leading their charge at guard. He'll be a good facilitator for him, so it'll be interesting to see who matches up with him. You know, because we saw in the Clemson game, Jameer and Micah were kind of switching off on Joe Girard, who was Clemson's best guard. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see that there. Jose Perez and Jemiah Neal are their two forwards who play a lot of minutes for him and are big contributors, taking a lot of shots. So they kind of keep the tempo up. But no massive star like you saw in a PJ Hall. It'll basically just be, you know, they're a much smaller team who runs about, I don't know, 6-7 deep. And it's a good test for TCU to see how well they are. It's definitely a solid opponent we saw last year. I mean, again, it's a whole new team, but they're going to want to come beat us based off, but we stole a tournament win from them last year. So
yeah,
it's going to be huge.
Frankie Collins is kind of doing his best Nikola Jokic impression right now for Arizona State. He's leading them. He's the team leader in points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, and steals per game. He's only not leading in blocks per game, but he's just one of those guys who's going to do it all for you. And TCU saw him last year. He's one of the guys I'm sure who wants to go beat TCU, because that was a game Arizona State feels like they let get away from him. So yeah, this is going to be, you know, especially after what we saw at a TCU against Clemson, this is going to be your kind of your get back moment. You like you said, you can't really lose this game. You can theoretically, but you don't want to lose this game. Yep. And yeah, I mean, Arizona State is just, you know, they're a fine opponent. They lost to Mississippi State, BYU, and like you said, San Diego, but they have wins. They have those good wins. They have wins against Vanderbilt, who really isn't turning out as good as some people thought they would. And then San Francisco and SMU are kind of bubble tournament teams. So they're a team that's capable of beating TCU. There's no question about it. So it's not a game where you just write in TCU, a TCU win, like you've kind of been able to for the last month. But yeah, it'll be exciting to watch how this team responds. And I think that's another thing in the Big 12. You want to see how your team responds to losses. Like you're going to lose in the Big 12, and you're in all likelihood the game after you lose, you're going to play another tough team. So seeing how this team responds right now is going to kind of give us an idea of how that will look in the Big 12, which is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I think it's super exciting game, because I think you focus more on TCU and less on Arizona State in terms of, you know, you just want to see them bounce back as a crew and just hit shots. I think Frank Collins, if I'm not wrong, was the guy who postered Chuck on that play last year in the tournament game. I think he was that guy, because so it'd be fun to see that matchup again. I guess those guys are coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm just interested to see how TCU bounces back. I feel like if TCU plays well, they should take care of Arizona State. I'm not concerned of, you know, both playing well in Arizona State. It's just a better team, because they're not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm super excited. I'll be at Dickey, so it should be a fun game.
What do you want to see? What are like three things you want to see corrected from the Clemson game? Obviously, like the shooting is one. You talk about that, and then two others that you would like to see them kind of fix.
Yeah, the half-court offense is big for me. When you're non-transition, and we saw this last year too at times, where TCU just has such a tough time in the half-court executing and getting open shots.
Yeah,
it seems like they're forcing stuff, or they just don't have maybe the playmakers to go get a shot on your own. And I don't know what I would love to see, like, efficiency stats in the half court, because it looked that bad. And I also just want to see bounce back games. It was the first time we've seen Jameer and Jacoby have really bad games, and Avery didn't play much, partly due to foul trouble. So those are three of your five most important guys. So I think bouncing back would be huge to see who will really be top performers for them once the season starts getting tough. So bounce back games, half court offense, and just keeping that transition style flow going is going to be huge for the Frogs.
Yeah, and I would like to see maybe a big game from Jameer, who struggled against Clemson, like we talked about. If he can come in and be a little bit more efficient. He was already good defense, like he was good defensively. They bothered Clemson for a long time that game, and
yeah,
it looked like Clemson was not going to be able to figure it out, but they did. But and Jameer Nelson Jr. was a big part of that. So I'm more worried about his offense and what he, you know, he was 2 of 12, 0 of 5. So that's never going to cut it in the Big 12, especially when you're kind of the feature guard. So I would love to see a bounce back game from him. Emmanuel Miller, you could probably count on him having a good game. He was not all that. He was decently efficient, not really efficient, but he led the team with 16. You can kind of start. It's getting to a point now where you kind of expect, like, those kind of games where you're maybe like 13 to 18 points.
Yeah.
That's kind of, it seems to be where he's kind of living this year.
I think too, we've come to the realization that we kind of had fun with Jacoby and other guys for a second, but E-Man is the best player on this team.
Yeah.
We saw
at
Georgetown when we needed someone to take over. Like, he's the guy. So
sure.
He'll probably be the most constant flow of points this whole season and most constant performer as we go on.
What did you make of Ernest Udeh Jr.? He had 4 points he was 4 of 8 from the free throw line, which isn't great, but he had 4 points, didn't take a real shot, but 10 rebounds, 6 offensives, 4 defensive. So that's kind of encouraging for me. He is a guy that, I mean, I don't know how big Arizona State is. I don't know what their size really is, but
I don't think they're too big. They run a lot because they like to run fast too. So they run, you know, a lot of slow guys, or a lot of like smaller guards like TCU.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're 120th out of 362 in average possession length. TCU is 2, so they both like to run fast. It's gonna be a fast game. They don't offensive rebound well, which TCU does. Which, to your point about Udeh, I loved how he offensive rebounded, and I think he probably played the best out of the bigs in that game.
Yeah.
But I mean, the bigs are just going to be what the bigs are at this point, which I think is just a constant rotation of three guys. So
yeah,
that's going to be huge.
I think we could see, like, Udeh, especially now, if he, I mean, after kind of a good game. I don't think he's ever going to be a scorer, but if he can grab 6 offensive rebounds a game, that's what you want. That's what TCU wants out of its bigs, especially when you have scorers who you're not depending on Ernest to score. You're depending on him to block shots and rebound, and he's blocking. I mean, he's rebounding right now. So, it looks like Arizona State is not super big. Their top 3 scorers are all guard type guys. So, and that's not really a great way to figure out if a team's big, but it does give you an idea of where their scoring is coming from, and that does not seem to be down low. So, you know, maybe Udeh can take advantage, maybe look at him to give you some second chances offensively. But he was another guy I liked against. He was one of the guys who played, I think, the best at Clemson. You know, one of his better games of the year in terms of rebounds. So that was encouraging, and I'd love to see him build on a great game and you know, turn in another one.
Yeah, we saw, I mean, in the last couple of years, Eddie Lamb can be super effective for the Frogs where he wasn't necessarily a big scorer. So he just needs to know his role, pick up boards, and get finishes when he wants to, because he's so athletic and his ceiling is so high that he can obviously be the best big man on this team and be huge if he develops later on in the season.
Yeah. Well, what else do you have? Do you have anything else about this game before we go, or what do you
think? I mean, it's just a massive game for the Frogs. If you're around a Fort Worth head to Dickies, make it a home court game for the Frogs. So that's going to be huge.
Yeah, I like the can't lose type game, like you said. I think it's not a must win, but it kind of, you don't want to lose this game, especially after what we saw against Clemson. So we'll see a lot from the Frogs, see if they can, see if they can bounce back and, you know, hopefully add their best win so far to the resume, which will be big in March.
Yeah, let's do it. I think the big takeaway is don't panic. Bounce back.
Bounce back. Bounce back. Well, if that's it, then let's close this thing out, I'd say. Thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you to everyone who's been listening. This has been fun for us. So we appreciate those who are tuning in every week. Thank you to Tori Couch, who came on and talked women's, TCU women's hoops. That was great. And I think Nick and I learned a lot about that team, and we'll probably try to catch some games because, you know, that team is, as you guys figured out, is hooping just like the men's team is. So, tuning into them will be worth it. And, overall, just thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Frog Fever Killer Frogs basketball podcast. You can find this episode wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, the Apple Music, whatever the podcast app is.
Amazon, Google, whatever it is.
Google. You can find it at killerfrogs.com as well if you want to watch us talk. It'll be out and go give it a listen. I am Davis Wilson. That is Nick Germani, and we will see you next week.